Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
There is nothing that I love more than a good massage, and studies have shown that the touch of an animal can actually lower a person's blood pressure. Now the touch of a person can ease the pain that a pet feels and improve their quality of life. Physical therapy is not new in human medicine, and physical rehabilitation is now available to pets with some amazing results. We're going to learn today how a veterinarian working with a physical therapist is easing pain, improving mobility, and providing that healing touch. My guests today are veterinarian Dr. Jessica Waldman and physical therapist Dr. Amy Kramer. We'll be right back after a few moments to hear from our sponsor.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
School's in session on Pet Life Radio with Teacher's Pet. Learn how to communicate with your pet, train your pet, and see the world from your pet's point of view. You may even learn a few tricks yourself. Teacher's Pet with pet expert and author Sarah Wilson. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.fidofriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Waldman graduated from the University of Pennsylvania with a degree in veterinary medicine. Plus, she has a certificate in canine rehabilitation and veterinary acupuncture. Dr. Amy Kramer is a graduate of Loma Linda University Physical Therapy School. I am so pleased to have the two of you on today from your California Animal Rehabilitation Hospital in Los Angeles. I think this is fantastic. Again, thank you so much for being with us. This is fairly unusual in veterinary medicine, isn't it?
It is unusual, and thanks for having us. We're really excited, and Amy and I have been working together to work on this concept of how a vet and a physical therapist could provide the most benefit to, you know, pets in need. And we're pretty excited to introduce it both to the physical therapy world of humans, and we can't use that word in pets, so in the rehabilitation world in veterinary medicine.
So why do you have to call it, Dr. Kramer, rehabilitation and not physical therapy?
Well, in the state of California, the term physical therapy is protected and can only be used by physical therapists, and specifically in the state of California, used in terms of human practice. So in our practice act, it states physical therapists do physical therapy on humans. In several other states, the term is listed, instead of human, it's listed as patient-client. But because of our restriction of the term human, we have to call it rehabilitation instead of physical therapy when we're doing it on animals.
But you're still doing basically the same type of manipulations, is that correct?
Absolutely. The treatments that we do are very, very similar to what we do in people.
What kind of conditions can you treat?
Dr. Waldman? Well, that's a good question. We treat anything from chronic lameness that could be from arthritis or previous injury or any kind of just restriction at all to post-op animals that have had, you know, orthopedic surgery or neurological surgery or some kind of a trauma. And then we also just treat patients with some chronic pain.
Chronic pain, I know, seems to be such a misdiagnosed or underdiagnosed problem. Dr. Kramer, what would be some of the indications that you would tell a client, this is really a sign of pain where they may just think it's a dog that's getting older?
You know what, oftentimes clients are really, really aware of what's going on with their dog, and they'll notice even subtle things like the dog doesn't want to get up on the sofa or on the bed anymore, you know, and it's because in order for them to do that, it causes the dog pain, and so they won't. They'll maybe stand at the end of the bed and wait for someone to help them. You know, they don't want to maybe go for their evening walk that they always used to do, or they don't want to go out through the dog door because that causes them to have to bend a leg a certain way that's now uncomfortable for them. So oftentimes, it's a functional issue that the owner will notice, my dog doesn't want to do this anymore, that would make, would give us an idea that the dog is actually in pain.
Dr. Waldman, would you agree that most pets, dogs and cats, don't vocalize their pain? I know too many times a client will come in and I can obviously tell that a dog has a lameness and it has to be painful or they're not going to be limping on a leg. And I say, well, it's in pain. They're going, well, it's not making any noise or it's not saying anything. How can it be in pain?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It is really hard to tell, and people do say, how do I know my dog isn't crying or limping? And you just, like me, go look at a pet and say, I know that's painful. I know it's painful to look at. I know it's painful by the way they're limping on it. But, you know, what I actually do when I go through the initial evaluation here is I show people, when I bend this dog's knee just to this point, you know, your pet looks at me, or your pet licks its lips, or your pet withdraws the leg from me. And these are such subtle signs. They're not crying and they're not screaming and they're not kicking, you know, to get out. But they are subtle signs that mean that's uncomfortable or the breathing just goes a little bit faster. And these are things that we teach them to look for because their assessment of the pet really helps us to see if we're going in the right direction also here.
Those subtle signs can be so significant. Now, you've been talking a lot, both you and Dr. Kramer, about dogs. Now, are you also seeing cats at your facility?
We actually right now are seeing a cat that had a FHO, and that cat, it's a 17-pound Maine Coon cat, and so he's bigger than some of the dogs that we treat. And we're actually getting really good results with him, and the treatment we're doing is just the same as we would do with dogs, although cats are a little bit more difficult. We really have to encourage this cat to play and use things to get him to actually play. But we have actually gotten that cat in the underwater treadmill. Believe it or not, it's a sight to see.
Well, yes, I can imagine a cat in an underwater treadmill. Wow, let me hold on to the sides. For those listeners who don't know what an FHO is, it's a femoral head ostectomy. So if they're basically looking at their leg with the hip being a ball and socket joint, they're removing the ball portion from the socket. Was it a hit by car type of an accident that caused this?
I think they actually said this is a genetic, that I think that its sibling, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Waldman, but it also had the same thing. And it was just a genetic disorder, sort of a hip dysplasia type. And this one dislocated completely, and so that's why they did that. Yeah,
well, people oftentimes think it's terrible, but especially with help like yours and Dr. Waldman, you can really get them back on all four paws. Now, you mentioned your first evaluation. Is this, you immediately kind of jump into treatment, or what do you do during that first evaluation when you see that patient coming through the door?
Well, it's actually really, truly holistic, meaning we really look at all aspects of the pet, from nutrition and supplements, medical records, imaging, meaning their x-rays or if they had an MRI, their surgery reports, And we really try to get a good picture of what's been going on before they come see us. And you did, you know, you did mention you do that, you know, we do similar things to a physical therapy clinic and people, and we do. But given that it's veterinary medicine, we end up doing a much broader approach. So both in the initial evaluation and in the treatment, we do counsel on nutrition and, you know, some Eastern medicine with some acupuncture, and we just make the whole approach a little bit broader. So that's included in that initial evaluation too. We do gait analysis. We do muscle girth measurements to see how much atrophy or how much smaller the muscles have become from not using them or from the nerves not stimulating the muscles properly. We do range of motion measurements, which physical therapists have done forever, where we actually measure the angles of the joints and how far they can go in each direction. Feel for pain all along the neck and spine and all along the legs and soft tissues and muscles and tendons and ligaments and their insertions. And we come up with a home exercise plan where we go ahead and give the owners all sorts of, we give them lots of homework, because the pets with the best outcome have the owners really involved at home.
Dr. Kramer, that was a question I was going to have for you. It sounds as though, you know, is it going to be just going to the physical therapist, where oftentimes a person who is recovering, I know my mom not too long ago broke her hip, and she was doing her physical therapy, and she was really good at doing her physical therapy when she was there at the physical therapist, and then she got home and kind of like, oh, well, I don't really think I want to do it. So you really are involving the owners in this.
We really are, and we really try to educate them as to why it's important. And, you know, I worked in human physical therapy for 16 years, and I honestly, it amazes me that I could tell a person to go home and do this shoulder range of motion exercise three times a day, and I would be lucky if they would do it once a week. And the majority of the owners, if they're taking the time to bring their dog in for rehab, they're really, really dedicated to these animals, and they are doing these exercises, you know, 3 to 10 times a day, and it's been great, and those are the dogs that are really doing really, really well. So the compliance of the owners in doing exercises with their dogs is so much better than it was asking, a person to do their own home exercises. It's really great. It makes my job easy.
Well, I can imagine it's a heck of a lot easier, and it's always so much easier to do it on somebody else or doing it on our animals. But what are some of the exercises, what are some of the treatment modalities, tools that you use there for physical rehabilitation? You'd mentioned the underwater treadmill. I think those are awesome. What else do you do?
Yeah, you know, in terms of what we have to offer, it truly is exactly some of the things that we did, that we did in human practice as well. As far as modalities, we use a therapeutic ultrasound. We use electrical stimulation. If, you know, we have some dogs that have had neurological problems where maybe they're paralyzed and we're trying to get them to learn to walk again, we can use electrical stim to stimulate their muscles, or if they've had disuse and so they've lost some muscle mass, we can use that to rebuild some of their muscle. We use laser treatments, we use heat, we use ice. We have the underwater treadmill, which is great, especially for dogs post-surgical on maybe a limb where they're not really ready to quite weight there fully. We can use that to off-weight some of their, you know, take away some of their weight through the buoyancy of the water and get them to start using it again. The therapeutic exercises, like we've mentioned, not just the home exercise program, but all the exercises that we do here in the clinic, and we get really, really creative, which is actually really fun. And then a lot of the manual therapy, the same stuff that we've done in humans for years, you know, doing range of motion and stretching, soft tissue mobilization, joint mobilization to increase range of motion, along with the acupuncture that Dr. Waldman does, it's and those are some of the things that we do. We do gait training, so we teach them how to walk again if, you know, maybe they weren't putting weight on a limb. You know, it's very, very similar to what we've done in people for years, and then we're just finally catching up with our animals.
Sometimes it takes veterinarians a little bit longer to catch on, but it sounds like you're doing a great job. Dr. Waldman, Dr. Kramer just mentioned right now acupuncture, and that's something where I think a lot of people, myself included, maybe a little bit skeptical that, oh, yes, it's a placebo. Now, at my own practice, we do have a Western-trained veterinarian from Canada who is certified in doing acupuncture for pets. And I've just seen some amazing, amazing changes. Now,
you are a certified acupuncturist. Sometimes people are tempted to go to their own acupuncturist or look in the phone book. Why should or shouldn't they do this?
Well, I think that for the same reason why, you know, Amy and I have teamed together, I think it's nice to keep treatment of animals that has to do with physiology and problems and, you know, what kind of disease processes are going on. I think it's good to keep it in the veterinary field, just because it's a little bit of a safety net, because veterinarians understand, you know, what's happening with the pets. So I think going to the phone book and looking up a veterinary acupuncturist is a great idea, but a veterinarian who has been certified in that. And actually, there was a great study in one of, you know, our veterinarians' probably most well-circulated journals just about a month ago on the positive Western study effects of electroacupuncture, which is when you put electrostimulation to each needle that you put in, and its effect on disc disease in pets. So I'm happy to see that our Western-minded veterinarians, and just including you and I, are studying it and publishing it in our journals. And I think it's becoming, like you said, a lot more accepted, and the results are quite amazing.
Do you find that the animals enjoy coming to you, or they look at it like, oh no, the cat is thinking they're putting me in that tank again, trying to drown me?
That the cat is not a fair example in the tank.
How about the dogs?
Amy, what do you think?
You know, we've tried to create an atmosphere that is calming for the dogs and reassuring for the dogs. We use, you know, very calming colors. We have music piped through the clinic, and it really gives the clinic a spa feel. And one of the other things that we really did when we did the build out of this facility is that, you know, you take your pets to the vet and the floors are this slippery tile, and the dogs, you know, that are compromised somehow, you know, post-surgical or neurologically, and they slide all over the floor and they have a hard time. The dogs come into this clinic and the owners are like, my dog walks so much better here, because we put a floor in that actually has some grit to it, so the dogs have better traction. We have, you know, plants and flowers, and it's very, very calming. Owners can't believe, they tell us, my dog hates going to the vet. He loves coming here. I don't know why it is. And the owners even love coming here. So I think we've created the atmosphere that we wanted, and where, you know, not only do owners feel comfortable having their dogs here, and some owners drop their dogs off, you know, while they go to work or run some errands and come back and get them. But the owners feel comfortable leaving the dogs here. The dogs are happy to come here because, you know, what we're doing not only makes them feel better, but we try to make it fun for them. So I think we've really achieved the goal of making it an effective place to come for them to get better, but also very calming, and it makes what we do much easier if the dogs are a little bit calmer.
Dr. Walden, we'll start with you first. Give me an example of just one of the greatest success stories you can remember.
Okay, I'll give you a success story, because you're a veterinarian and you know how difficult elbow arthritis is to treat or see results with.
Oh, it's terrible.
So we had a great client who already had brought a dog with hip dysplasia successfully through the program, and we made a ton of success with this dog's exercise tolerance and range of motion and pain and all this stuff. And she had another older lab. And this lab has had just progressive elbow arthritis for 4 years. And this dog limps so badly, it hardly puts weight, you know, on its leg. And so I told her, you know, right away, I said, I really want to try, and I really want to do all the things that we can, but elbow arthritis just in general has been typically very hard to treat. And so we both went into it kind of with an open mind, and Amy was on board, and we all thought, well, we're just going to do everything we can think of. And we did. We did, you know, acupuncture and weight loss and nutrition and supplements and a lot of range of motion and passive range and active range. And we did the laser, and we did something that we also have called pulse signal therapy, which is something that that's used in Europe for bone healing or arthritis or osteoporosis in people, but has not yet been approved by the FDA for use in people here in the U.S., but we can luckily use it for the pets. So we used all these different things, and the owner's great and dedicated. The dog went in the underwater treadmill and did a lot of exercises, and this dog does not limp after an 8-week program. And to me, I was so amazed and so happy, just thrilled
that
with progress.
That is spectacular. That is great. Dr. Kramer, can you top that one?
Actually, I think I can.
Okay.
Or at least I will try. We had a little peek-a-poo that an owner called us and said that her dog had had emergency disc surgery. The dog had ruptured a disc and went acutely down and had emergency surgery. And after surgery, I think she said like 5 days went by, she went to pick up the dog. And there had been some complications, and the dog wasn't walking. And the surgeon didn't, you know, feel real confident that the dog would walk again, but said, you know, there's a rehab clinic down the street, and they can fit little dog for a wheelchair or for a cart, so for wheels. And you know, the woman, you know, was, okay, I'll go down there and, you know, see what we, you know, what we can do. And she came in, and Dr. Waldman evaluated the dog. The dog's name was Monkey, and she thought, you know, this dog, I think, has potential. Let's try rehab. We don't want to fit this dog for a cart yet. I really, really think this dog has some potential. And the dog definitely did not walk, scooted itself along the floor. And we started working with a dog who started to do pretty well in the underwater treadmill. And the lady, the owner asked us if she could board the dog with us while she went out of town. And we said, yeah, absolutely. And so the dog then got therapy every day, twice a day, sometimes three times a day, because we all wanted to see this dog walk again. And the owner came back 11 days later, and the dog, we opened the door, and the dog walked out to her.
Oh, my God. She must have just been crying with that.
She was crying. She tells the story all the time now, and she said she cries every time she tells the story.
I think you might have topped it.
It was pretty awesome. She topped it fine.
All right. Well, Dr. Kramer, Dr. Waldman, this sounds like just a fantastic facility that you have. Now, a pet owner that is back east on the East Coast, since you're on the West Coast, what can they do? Are there other groups such as yourself throughout the United States?
There are actually several really, really great facilities out there, and there are more and more that are, you know, popping up. California was a little bit slow on the uptake on getting a facility like ours out here, but there's a great facility in Chicago. There's several people in New York that are doing it. So, you know, really, if you type in dog rehab, dog physical therapy, you know, on a search engine, you'll find that there are several places. And there's a couple of the certificate programs that are out there. There's one in Florida and there's one in Tennessee. And those both on their websites also have lists of clinicians who have gone through their programs who are now certified in rehab. And I think there's probably someone in every state now.
Fantastic. If somebody wanted to get in touch with your group, the California Animal Rehabilitation Hospital, how would they find you?
They could find us by calling us. Our number is 310-998-CARE or 2273. And we also have a website where we try to go through and explain everything that happens here. So that would be good too. And our website is www.calanimalrehab.com. And that's CALANIMALREHAB.com.
Well, California Animal Rehabilitation, also known as CARE, bases its approach on a holistic approach by treating animals. They incorporate Western medicine, body condition, nutrition, all the while involving the pet owner, which is a critically important factor in improving the life of their patients. Dr. Kramer, Dr. Waldman, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate your being on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Well, please stay tuned. After the short break, we'll be back with Marianne Dell. She'll be reviewing some new books and some ideas that you may want to give children as Christmas presents or the pet lover in your life. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Passengers, please fasten your seatbelts, put your seatbags and sleeping pets in their full upright position, and prepare for takeoff.
Pet Life Radio presents Travel Tales, the show where you'll get great travel ideas on perfect places for you and your pet. From Paris to paradise, south of the border to the South Seas, Travel Tales will give you cool tips on fun vacation destinations to travel with your pet. pet-friendly hotels, and advice on how to travel safely and happily with your furry best friends. So, get ready to pack the bags and the bones with your Travel Tales hosts, Susan Sims and Nicholas Veslovsky, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Thank you very much for staying tuned to Pet Doctor and Pet Life Radio. We are going to be listening to right now to some great book reviews by Mary Ann Dell. She is the person responsible for pet coverage for the Orange County Register newspaper in Orange County, California. As a kid, I remember I loved sitting there with my kitty in my lap, reading books, just going to other worlds. And now I'm a grandma, and I refuse to give toys to my grandchildren because everybody gives them toys. So I am the book-giving grandma. And now, thanks to Mary Ann, I can give some great books. So Mary Ann, thank you so much for being with us again.
Well, it's always a delight, Dr. Cruz. I'm glad to be here.
And you have some wonderful books?
Yeah, we have some great ones tonight. So let's get started. The first one is called Samsara Dog. And this is by Helen Manos. Illustrations are by Julie Vivas, and the publisher is Kane Miller. It's $17.95, and it's for ages 5 to 8. And there's just so many wonderful things about this book. The author is a Buddhist, and she writes about, she writes about one of her religion's basic tenets, reincarnation. Dog is followed through several lives, as a street dog, as an airport detection dog, as a rescue dog in the mountains, even as a little pup who, when he's born, is too weak to survive. And as he goes through these many reincarnations, he has different owners, lives in different places in the world, until finally he meets up with a boy who he spends his life with as the boy grows into a man. And with this boy, he learns the most important lesson of all, how to deal with the world with love and compassion, and how to find that thing within us that allows us to love others even more than we love ourselves. And this becomes his last life. Even with, if you aren't a Buddhist, certainly as many people in our culture aren't, it's a wonderful way to introduce children to another religion. If part of your parenting is to expose children to different belief systems, it's non-threatening because it talks about a dog, not people, which might be not as scary to a child as if you were to approach the issue talking about people. And it even could be something that could help parents deal with the issue of losing a pet, because it makes it maybe not quite as threatening if you look at it using this belief system.
An awesome book. What an interesting tenet. I'd never heard of it being addressed in this manner, especially for young children, ages 5 through 8.
Yes. No, I never did. I never did either. And there's a poem in the beginning of the book about samsara and what it means to Buddhists. And it's just...
What does it mean?
I knew you'd ask me that. It has to do, again, with discovering what's really important, and that being how Buddhists believe you reach enlightenment, which is the place at which you no longer have to be reincarnated. And that's, of course, simplifying what's greatly more complicated if you study the religion, but in a nutshell, that's what it boils down to. And clearly, to this author, that is compassion and love and unconditional love, which wouldn't it be nice if more of us had that? And how often do we talk about that as being something that comes from our pets?
Very much so. This sounds like it's definitely something for an adult to read with a child, probably help the adult also at the same time.
I think so. There's some nice lessons for those of us who long since passed age 8 in it.
So Samsara Dog by Helen Manos, $17.95, ages 5 through 8.
Wondrous. Yes. I can tell this is a book I am buying for the grandchildren. Don't anybody tell.
Now, I never heard a word.
Never heard a word, yes.
Nope.
And what else do you have for us?
My next one is part of one of my favorite series of children's books, and it stars Biscuit the dog. And Alyssa Satin Capuccilli has been writing these books for quite a few years now, and her latest is Biscuit's Christmas Eve. And this is for the younger readers, 2 to 6. It's $6.99, and it's a sweet little story about getting ready for Santa. And it just brings to mind Christmases past for people who celebrate Christmas and who did as children, and getting the tree trimmed and putting the stockings up and getting the cookies out and ready for Santa. And the neat thing about this, like all the Biscuit books, Biscuit is so clearly a member of the family. Biscuit has a stocking that gets hung up, and when the cookies come out for Santa, there's a Biscuit for Biscuit. And I know, it's so cute. And it reminds us at this incredibly, what can be an incredibly hectic and stressful time of year, to remember our pets and be sure to take care of them too, because it's easy sometimes to lose them in the shuffle of shopping and wrapping and gift giving and parties and celebrating. And it can be very stressful for them, sometimes more so than us even, because they don't understand why this is all happening.
I have a feeling, Marianne, that you would likely agree with me that giving a pet at this time of year is definitely not a good idea. Oftentimes, you see the pictures, movies of the child opening up the package, and there's the puppy in the box or the kitten in the box, and isn't that cute? But as you said, this is such a crazy time of year that trying to bring a new puppy or kitten into the house just can be not a good idea.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And the adjunct to that is really giving a pet as a gift, particularly a dog or a cat, is not the greatest thing, because truly the person who is going to live with that animal really needs to have a hand in choosing it. And so much better, people are very well-meaning, but if I had children and I had decided that a dog would be a neat thing to get for Christmas, what I would do is take a box and wrap up maybe a stuffed dog with a little certificate that says, when the holidays are over and everything's calmed down, we will go together to the animal shelter and pick out our new dog.
Wonderful idea.
Or you can give a leash or a collar or a bag of really good quality dog food or some treats or some cat treats or a litter pan or something. But something that, you know, something inanimate, something that isn't going to get underfoot during the holidays or be forgotten or just not that the family won't have time for because so much else is going on.
Excellent ideas, yep. Marianne. Thank you so
Absolutely.
Much. So we've been talking about Biscuit's Christmas Eve by Alyssa Satin Capuccilli. Is that correct?
I think so.
All right. $6.99. Thank you for letting us know how much. Great little stocking stuffer at $6.99.
Yes.
Ages 2 through 6. Now this last one, or this next one you're going to talk to us about, I love it. A Gaggle of Geese and a Clutter of Cats.
This one's just too cute. The author of this one is Dandy Daly Mackle. It's $9.99 and it's for ages 4 to 8. And it is a book that tells us what different groups of animals are called. And, you know, we all know about a herd of horses or a pack of wolves. But who knew that a group of crows was called a murder or that kangaroos come in troops? And it's told in rhyme. And the illustrations are very, very cute. The troop of kangaroos is jumping across the plains, and they're wearing their Boy Scout and Girl Scout uniforms. So it's not just a book that helps kids and, frankly, adults, because I didn't know a lot of these, learn about what these different groups of animals are called, but it also is full of the concept of synonyms. you know, there's two different meanings for troops, or several different meanings. And you have the troop of kangaroos and you have a Girl Scout troop. The Sleuth of Bears, I love it. They have their Sherlock Holmes hats and jackets and pipes on, and they're looking with their magnifying glasses in the forest, and it's just adorable.
Now, I have to tell you, I am cheating right now, because as we are chatting, I have the internet open, and I am looking at animal names. And do you happen to know what a parcel stands for? A group of what kind of animals?
Gosh, I don't. That wasn't in this book.
It's a parcel of birds.
Birds? Wow.
Yes. And an obstensacy? No, I won't even try that because I can't pronounce it. That's terrible. But a rabble of butterflies and a flock of camels.
Oh.
Who comes up with these things? Yes.
Interesting, isn't it? It really is. And you wonder if maybe they were originated in a different language and that's what it translates into in English. Because who would call something a murder?
And a flock of camels. No.
Yeah. Yes. Flock, we always think of birds.
Definitely. So this is a gaggle of geese and a clutter of cats, having to pronounce everything very slowly and distinctly by
right.
Dandy Daily Mackle and Waterbook Press for $9.99, ages 4 through 8. And I will stop while I'm ahead. And what is your next book, Marianne?
Well, this one is yet another one that has a marvelous little lesson in it. This one's called Alfred's Nose. It's by Vivian Flesher. Catherine Tegan Books. It's $16.99 and it's for ages 4 to 7. And Alfred is one of my favorites. He's a French bulldog.
Oh,
you don't see? They're adorable, aren't they? And this one is told with photographs. So Alfred is truly there. I believe that he is the author's dog. And so she's photographed him. He is a very tolerant dog also when you see some of these photographs. Because the story is about how Alfred really doesn't like his pushed-in nose and his tongue that tends to hang out of his mouth a little bit. And he wants desperately to look like everybody else. And so he tries a whole bunch of different looks on. He tries a cow nose, an elephant nose, and even a regular dog nose. And what the author uses are those plastic noses you can buy with the elastic that you can sometimes use as part of costume.
Must be hysterical photos.
It's really cute. And bless his heart, Alfred obviously tolerates it very well. But to no avail, because it really doesn't make him better. In fact, it sort of hampers him. For instance, when he puts the dog nose on, he can't give his friends kisses. So he learns that his friends, who love him just the way he is, are really right. And maybe it's not so bad to have a pushed-in nose and a tongue that sticks out of his mouth a little bit.
Wonderful stories for children. This is a great way for them to learn.
Yeah, exactly. You know, tolerance, and we're not all the same, but that doesn't make us any less good or any less what we are. So really terrific stuff. I love that these books have so many lessons in them. And you know, I grew up reading kids' books. Of course, as a child, I never thought of that. And I never really thought of it until I started reviewing them, how much there is to learn from them for kids, and such opportunities for adults to talk to kids about what's important.
Now, I know that you have a huge library of animal-related books, children's books, and you have some real all-time favorites. Now, some of these have been around for a while, but I think they're worth reminding people that, these are some good books for children that are teaching some great lessons. Can you give us examples of a few?
I sure can. One of my favorites is called May I Pet Your Dog? The How-To Guide for Kids Meeting Dogs and Dogs Meeting Kids by Stephanie Kamenson, and it's $9.95 for ages 4 to 7, but really, it's a good primer for adults, too. It has a note to grown-ups in the beginning that explains what the author is trying to do, which is to help teach kids what to do around dogs they don't know, especially if adults aren't around to help them. Obviously, the best thing is to avoid a situation where your child has to meet a strange dog on his or her own, particularly small children. But if they're armed with a little bit of knowledge of how dogs see us and what the best way to approach or not approach is, then it's certainly much better. It can help avoid, you know, the biggest group of people who get bitten, unfortunately, by dogs or children.
Definitely children the same age group, and oftentimes little boys seem to be the most common ones to be bitten.
Yes, because they rush in.
Let me play. It's cute.
Yep, exactly. It talks about approaching a dog from the side, about never just touching a dog, about always asking the owner or whoever is handling the dog if you can greet the dog, and listening to what they tell you. Different dogs like to be approached and handled or not handled in different ways. And it gives some suggestions and examples of dogs not to approach, like service dogs or a dog that's growling or barking. Don't stick your hand in a car if the dog's in there. Even if the dog's normally friendly, it might be guarding its car. And then the back of the book has a whole bunch of do's and don'ts for parents to look at, things for them to tell their children. Don't approach a dog head on. Approach a dog from the side. Don't loom over a dog. Don't pat it on the head. Just great, great, great information in a really succinct, quick to read, easy to follow book. It is well worth every penny of $9.95.
I think it's a marvelous way for children to learn, because too many times, yes, they don't think. And oftentimes the parents don't realize the little dogs can be just as problematic as the large dogs. We think of, you know, we hear all these horror stories about pit bulls. 99% of the pit bulls that walk into my practice are wonderful, fantastic dogs. So I'll always remind people that any dog, big or small, can be a good or a not so well-mannered dog. A lot of it depends on the people who've raised it and what it's been exposed to in its lifetime.
Absolutely. And of course, none of this is to take away parents' responsibility for keeping their eyes on their children. And if they have them somewhere, not only teaching them proper etiquette around animals, but if they're somewhere where there are a lot of animals, making sure that they're paying attention to what their children are doing. So the experience is positive for both children and animals.
Great. So it's May I Pet Your Dog? How to guide for kids meeting dogs and dogs meeting kids by Stephanie Kalmanson, published by Clarion Books, $9.95, ages 4 through 7.
That's right.
Now the other end of the animal.
Yes. Another book in a similar vein is called Tails Are Not for Pulling. This is by Elizabeth Verdick, Free Spirit Publishing. It's $11.95 for ages 6 to 10, a little bit older group. And this one is, again, full of marvelous, marvelous illustrations and really basic advice. Tails are for wagging, not for pulling. Ears are for listening, not for yanking. Fur should be petted, not grabbed. And overall, animals are to be loved, not teased. And it also shows some body language, how animals stand, what ears mean, what tails mean. It also has a guide for parents that talks about how kids can become responsible caretakers of animals. And it's, again, another one of those books that's not just great for kids to read or parents to read to kids, but for parents to read themselves. If parents are thinking about getting an animal, a dog or a cat, any kind of pet, really, even a small pocket pet, this is such a great book for them to get and read first, so that they have an idea of how to educate their kids, particularly if they've never had a pet before.
There's many a client that comes in that purchases a very hyperactive dog, and they have a family full of small children. It's like, gee, that was probably not the best idea, but it seemed cute on TV, and that's why they do it. So you're right. They definitely need to do their homework. And so many people aren't aware that, gee, an animal's wagging its tail. It may not be a happy wag. There's a lot more going on than just, you know, briefly looking at a dog or cat's body language, thinking it's happy, or that little purr that a Rottweiler may be doing that is not necessarily a happy purr.
So. That's right. Or the purr that a cat is giving that we always tend to think means it's happy, but can also indicate stress. It's very important for people to know these things.
And it sounds like Tails Are Not for Pulling is a great book for them to learn about this. And if people wanted to learn more about pets and animals and behavior, where can they reach you to learn more about you and all these marvelous things you have to tell us?
Well, they can read some of the stuff that I do online at www.ocregister.com and go to the pets page on the Register's website. We have a lot of good information on there about pet owning. We have some fun stuff, like you really need to go on now and look before we take it down because it's getting a little old, at the cat who won our Halloween costume contest.
Oh,
somebody
fun.
Dressed a Siamese in a pumpkin outfit, and if a cat ever was looking at anybody and saying, I am so going to get you for this, it is the most hysterical picture you'll ever see.
Well,
but he's good spirited. He let them put the costume on and stayed with it long enough to get his picture taken at least.
I love it.
Oh, it's really funny. It's very cute. And we've got a lot of good information on there. So,
and they can get the information on these various books?
I don't have all the books listed on there right now. At some point, I hope to.
All right.
And we are going to put together a holiday gift guide, and some of these will be on there. Great things for parents to get their kids or to get the whole family if they're thinking about getting a pet, not as a gift, but after the holidays.
Well, Mary Ann Dell of the Orange County Register, thank you so much for giving me some great gift-giving ideas for my grandchildren and a couple of books I think I'm going to probably put in my pet store at the hospital so people can learn that tails are not for pulling and give it to their children. Learn more about your pets, learn about their health, learn about your children interacting with pets, and why is this so important to us? Because they are part of our family. So stay tuned next week for more information about pets that make up part of our lives.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.